Welcome to the Celestial Heavens review of Might and Magic Heroes 7. It's December 31st, 2015. I am a local Celestial Heavens admin, and let's start with some useful information, shall we? In case there are those of you who are still wondering if you should buy this game. The game requires a huge download capability. Even if you buy the DVD version, there is a huge patch of around 11 gigabytes you need to download right off the bat. Then there are the other patches, easily taking the total download amount up to 16 gigs. If you have a slow bandwidth quota or a very slow connection, the patching becomes prohibitively slow, and you can just forget about playing this game. There is some comforting news, though. I have it confirmed from the developers that since the patching is processed through Steam or Uplay, you can interrupt that download and start it up again later from where you left off. That means you can, realistically, download the patches if the problem with your connection is that slow or unstable. You can set it to patch and leave it overnight, or go to work. It's only if you have a small quota or non-DSL line that it becomes impossible. So, to conclude, the game is totally unsuited for anyone who either has a slow web connection, non-broadband, or has a limit on how much data you can download. Even if you have a good connection, like I do question the optimization when you have to download 4 DVDs worth of updates. With that out of the way, though, it's time to have a look at the quality of the actual game. Gameplay, 4 stars out of 6, quite enjoyable, but still lacking something. I'll start with the elephant in the room, the bugs. The game was released with quite a lot of them, myriad is a fitting word, and even though the Limbic people have been working their butts off with the patching, the game is still fraught with them half a year later. I'll give the Limbic developers an A for effort, seeing as they are releasing small hotfixes very quickly if needed, and are still working hard to release bigger patches in stages, but as the quality of the game is to be the basis of this review, I'm afraid effort just isn't enough. We still have abilities that malfunction, artifacts that can't be transferred from one hero to another, and more. That said, though, I have played the campaigns for over 50 hours now, and still I have not encountered the kind of game-breaking bug of the kind did in the beta. It's mostly small stuff. The game is definitely playable, then, but is it enjoyable? Let's go deeper into that, shall we? The AI. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. On the adventure map, the AI is a mixed experience. It seems to judge your strength correctly, so it comes for you if you have a small army, and runs away if you have the strength in numbers. It also recruits creatures from its towns. It is a bit thick when it comes to clearing its own area in single-player mode, though. There are still neutrals to be fought, mines to be flagged, and resources to be picked up. Nothing looks dumber than an AI hero running right past a pile of gold lying unguarded. Then suddenly it does pick up stuff. The auto-combat, in combat, works reasonably well, but even I, no more than a medium-skilled player, can do better. The quick combat is the same way. It's okay, but you can do better and get through battles with few to zero losses if you do it yourself and make an effort. The main issue is the computer's disregard for magical powers. It seems to calculate the losses on hero level and army strength, but if you use the correct spells in combat, you can get better results. This is made all too clear when the quick combat loses a battle the computer claims as only a modest threat, while I win quite easily when playing it on manual. The point of this is that losing troops may not be a big deal in an individual battle. A win is a win, right? The AI seems to think so. But, as we all know, conservation of troops is a good thing strategy-wise. The more troops you lose, the more difficult later battles will become. The fight again feature is really nice here. Some might consider it cheating a bit, but it's just like a quick reload feature, really, enabling you to try the quick combat first and fight manually if you don't like the results. In battle, the AI does usually go for shooters, it does that, but then it sometimes moves away from them again, so it isn't too bright. Suddenly, it uses Armageddon with an immune creature in its army, and you lose the fight. Then, when you repeat the fight, it seems to think that doing something completely different is a better idea. So, the conclusion is that it's sometimes quite clever, sometimes quite stupid. Explain that. The maps and campaigns. Very good, actually. First, I'd like to commend the guy or guys who came up with the way the campaigns are set up. Ivan has gathered some advisors, the council, representing different factions, and before he decides what to do, he will listen to each of them tell a story. The faction campaigns, therefore, are the stories told by the different advisors. These stories are laid up in different ways. The Haven story is about young Thomas of Wolfe and the decisions he had to make when they were opposing the Empire. The Academy story is different. It has several small stories, and you play different heroes, and so on. When you have listened to, i.e. played through, all the stories, Ivan's own campaign unlocks. This is an interesting way of setting the scene. Several stories, each with its own moral, all tied up into one. It enables the developers to tell very different stories that don't necessarily have a clear connection. Also, it's kind of funny that you are Ivan Griffin, but in the Haven campaign you play as people who opposed your duchy in the past. It has you rooting for your enemies. Come on, you Griffin scum, I will kill you all! And wait a minute, those Griffin guys are my ancestors. The campaign story is well written, the voice acting is good. The campaign cutscenes is one of the things fans have complained about. Still images instead of moving lips is a bit of a disappointment, but it's a bagatelle, really. I'd be more concerned if Limbic had spent lots of time and money on this kind of thing. I have played games where all the efforts were put into the intro video and the rest of the game sucked, so I prefer this. The 16 single maps are also quite nice, and new maps are being released with patches. Contents is still being added. In total, you can get over 100 hours of playing time just with the standard material. If our community of fans start producing more maps soon, that will only increase. A lot of fans keep comparing Ubisoft games to how much playtime you got out of Heroes 3 and 4, but I find it more fruitful to compare it to other modern games. The fact of the matter is that there are games I have played less than Heroes 7. Hero development. Sort of works, but could be better. In this game, you are given a skill wheel of sorts, enabling you to look at the various skills in which your hero can specialize. There's a decent variation. You can choose governorial skills and strategic skills, straight defensive and offensive bonuses to your creatures, war machines, or different schools of magic. This in addition to the unique faction abilities. However, I still think there should be a clearer distinction between magic and might heroes. As it is, might heroes do have access to magic, and the difference doesn't seem that big given that you only really use a few spells and stick with those. The Academy heroes are different, having access to more and being more proficient at the use of spells. Still, the product is that the hero development is not as diverse as it could be. You are left with only a few builds to choose from since they work better than the others. For instance, your main might hero should develop his offense and defense skills to boost his creatures, but so should your magic hero. Your magic hero should build magic skills, but even might heroes do need some spells to boost the creatures in combat. No matter what, you end up not being able to specialize completely in practice. Some things are just needed, no matter what you do. Entertainment value. It's there. Sometimes. Is this game any fun? Or is it merely a time-consuming exercise in traversing the world of Ashan looking for a way to escape your real-life chores? What we're looking for is both general entertainment value and something we like to call the hero's feel, an X factor that we can't really put our finger on but gives us the feeling we're supposed to be getting when we're playing. Now, let's start with the general value. There are still some balance issues to sort out. I, for instance, think the weakness, firewall, and inner fire spells are overpowered, but these are simple to fix once there's enough data suggesting a tweak needs to be made. The problem here is that there's a limited amount of strategies and builds that work, and once you find those, they're the ones you stick to. You can pretty much use the three aforementioned spells and very little else in most battles, causing you to feel like you're doing the same thing over and over and over. This lack of diversity caused me to use quick combat during my campaigns in almost all small to medium battles, since I just wanted the fight over with. The only time I fought the battles manually was when I had to, when fighting heroes, or when losses were mounting. Suddenly, though, I found myself enjoying it. Once you get into the game and figure out what the creatures, spells, and abilities can do, or when you start to plan the building process of your town so that you'll be ready for the enemy hero who will arrive in 5 turns, that's when the hero's feel started showing up. For instance, you have to know how to fight certain creatures. Some of them have abilities that enable them to jump straight to your ranks and block your shooters. How do you prevent this? I found myself thinking, how can I manage to get through this battle without losses against these powerful creatures? Let me just check the spellbook here. That's what I'm talking about. I didn't get that feeling much on the adventure map. In combat, though, there it is. That feeling you get when you use spells and boost creatures to take out a huge stack of champion creatures without losses, or that feeling when you outmaneuver the enemy hero with a better choice of spells, or when you realize that despite his bigger army, your stats are higher and thus you are slowly starting to turn the battle around. That's the hero's feel, baby. Tutorials were initially missing, and instead there were links to gameplay videos demonstrating the game's features. Lots of people have complained about the lack of a tutorial map, but I found the introductory Haven map so easy that it served as a tutorial for me. In patch 1.6, a separate tutorial map was introduced, though. Personally, I can take it or leave it, and this issue has no influence in my evaluation of the game. Anything else? Well, some quick likes and dislikes. I like that you can see how many stacks you'll be facing, not just the number of creatures. This is relevant for the planning of spell use. I like the fact that you can easily traverse waters by entering a ship and disembarking again in one simple movement. The weak of features are good, traditional, and people familiar with earlier games will recognize these. I like the local guard feature, giving you some extra defenses in fortified towns. The special war machines are really cool. I don't like the lack of a fog of war. Seeing the enemy move around all the time is just boring. Also, I don't like the Steam permission prompt every time I start the game. It's already installed. There should be no need for Steam to make changes to it every time. Multiplayer. So marred by faults, it's ridiculous. The multiplayer features of Hero 7 is, in my experience, absolute shit. It's a turd, a cowpat, utter rubbish. Firstly, you have to go through that horrendous Uplay program in order to play online. What's wrong about this program, I hear you ask? A simple Google search can help, but if you want me to summarize, it has a history of frequent faults and downtime, questionable security, and resource drain. The fact that there are separate websites keeping track of the problems with Uplay should tell you something. What happened to me when I was trying to play online? Well, first I was told to sign in, of course. Then I tried to access a lobby and find some active games, and then this happened. There you go. Pick a random time to try it, and presto, it doesn't work. It's like malfunctions have become the norm. Once again, it seems that Ubisoft are unable to deliver a suitable framework for online play on the PC. I don't understand why they even bother trying anymore. The other problem is lack of players. If you finally do manage to get the thing to work, there aren't many games out there. As you can see from the image above, there were only two when I tried it. I'm sure it varies, but to my mind it seems that many players have been scared away from the online experience. Sim turns were demanded by the fans and they are in the game, but don't always function properly. Load times are long, glitches are numerous. Seriously, just turn it into a single player game. Graphics and sound. 3 stars out of 6. Good looking sound, shame about the interface. Graphics. Looking good, but is it worth it? Ever since Ubisoft took over the Mad Magic franchise, the look of it all has been one of the main changes made. While using modern graphics engines is something that probably would have happened no matter who was in charge, we here at Celestial Heavens are divided in our opinion of this. On the one hand, we love the simplicity and functionality of the Heroes 3 and 4 adventure map graphics. On the other hand, the new engines give you so many possibilities. Weather effects like fog and rain, lightning effects, more fluid animation for trees and water, etc. This scenery was good in H5, better still in H6, and I have to admit, even better in Hero 7. My main problem with it has always been that it doesn't give enough value for money, that it does not justify the game's high PC requirements. I still slightly feel that way. Even with my current gaming rig, I get choppy frame drops during Hero 7 campaign cutscenes, and some of the big maps, not to mention the load times. I do feel that it's moving in the right direction. You can't zoom in hideously in the adventure map anymore, and that's a good thing. You can also spin the map around, while the one thing I do miss is the ability to tilt the map so you can have more of a bird's eye view. The problem remains, though, this isn't a nature documentary. It's a video game. Scenery should not be the main thing you notice. The town screens look good. Not fantastic, but good. I know some of you will disagree, but I don't care. The point of a town screen is to look nice and be informative at the same time, and it does that. Using a 3D town screen never worked very well in the previous games, in my view, and having this 2.5D screen is a refreshing return to the Heroes 4-like looks. If there's one criticism, it is that the buildings are purely decorative. Speaking of which, just as in some of the earlier games, there are structures and buildings on the adventure map that are purely ornamental. Man, is that confusing. The music. A new direction. I could dedicate an entire section just for this, and since I'm paying the bills for this site, I will. This time around, the dynamic duo we know as Rob and Paul were given the task of setting the music for the game while not being given the rigid instructions. It's like they were told what the game would be about, and which factions it would include, and told to let their minds run wild to see what they could come up with. Telling stuff like that to artists is not without risk. You could end up with an avant-garde-like project that sounds like Björk and is never completed, but you can also get something really unique and spectacular. Giving the likes of Mozart an unlimited budget and no time constraints could easily see him spend the next 3 years being drunk, but it could also produce the most beautiful music the world will ever know. So, how have our guys performed? The answer is, quite well. On the adventure map, the music sets a mood that fits with the factions. I'm not so sure about the battle music. It seems inspired by Bach's dark organ pieces, only to be suddenly, but blissfully, pierced by a Puccini-esque high note from the lovely Karin Mushegin. Some of this was really annoying, intense and dark, like hearing an organist keeping the keys pressed for too long. I was looking forward to every second Karin could hop in with some serenity and calm with that lovely voice of hers, only to have the organ grinding continue moments later. The blend is what I find strange. It's like 1 minute being in a Batman film, watching the Joker and the Penguin dance merrily around a carousel, and the next minute I'm in a medieval convent hearing Gregorian chants. It leaves me confused. I guess this is what happens when you give composers a free rein. You get beautiful music, but you're not sure it fits with everything in the game. That's what I mean by a new direction. It's the composers themselves choosing direction this time, and they're doing it slightly differently, choosing themes according to what they think each town should sound like. The town music varies with the factions. Some of it is a blend between Viennese waltz and carnival music. Some is more choir and piano. Not all of them are to my personal liking, but they're varied, and Rob and Paul have succeeded in setting a theme for each faction. The Stronghold town music is pretty good with its typical medieval court feast theme. A particular highlight is the necropolis, with Karin in a more prominent role. Seriously, I know I sound a bit like a fanboy, but when you have an international opera star available, you don't have her sing Mary Had a Little Lamb. Leave it at that. You let her loose and get as much of her you can. That's what's been done with the necropolis town music. On the whole, the fans of Rob and Paul will not be disappointed, and I'm very happy they were recruited to do the music in this game. We get quality. I'm just not sure I'd buy the soundtrack. User interface. Where are the frickin' buttons? The first hour of play, I thought it was absolutely terrible. As I got used to it, I modified my opinion to bad. While the scenery looks very nice, I found manoeuvring on the adventure map a real chore. You do get used to it, though. You just have to work through that initial, oh my god, this is terrible, feeling. The menus are intuitive, and you can change all sorts of settings. The in-game commands are sometimes intuitive, sometimes insanely difficult to work out. Once you understand them, however, they're very quick to use. I suspect that it has been designed so on purpose. I remember that I had to search online for a way to set a hero as governor of a town, something as simple as that, but once I knew how, it was easy. Other things, such as building, recruiting creatures, finding your inventory or skill screen, these are all good. My main problem with the interface is the small size of the buttons and structures. They're hard to see, and I keep wondering why they made it this way. It's as if they wanted the scenery, which does look lovely, I'll admit, to be the main thing in the game. Every time I want to see the artifacts in my hero's inventory, or see how many creatures I have in my army, I have to move my face closer to the screen, so I can see them properly. This, along with the fact that the game is still a bit choppy, compels me to rate the graphics as mid-level in quality. Changing the game. 4 stars out of 6. It looks good, but there are challenges. Editor. Looks exciting, but oh, the size! The map and campaign editor is the most important factor in determining a Heroes game's long-term success. People still play Heroes 4, and it's not because of the campaigns or the multiplayer. The condition for turning Heroes 7 into a classic, a game that we several years from now will call one of the most celebrated games in the series, is to have an editor that normal people, non-developers, can use to its full potential. So, can they? What's the verdict? Have Limbic created a good editor? Well, I tried it, spent some time frustrating over it, and set the benchmark. If I, an amateur who hasn't made a decent map since Heroes 4, but who loves the Heroes 4 editor, can make a map with the Heroes 7 editor, I will give it a clean bill of health. And while the map is not finished yet, and I'm still not sure about the more advanced script, I tend towards saying, holy crap, I think they've done it. It starts out promising. Even though it took 4 minutes for the program to boot, its requirements are even higher than the game. The menus are fairly simple. You can choose how many players you want and change it along the way, setting them to play on the same team, against you, or whatever you wish. There are also the options of setting the starting resources, enabling or disabling specific week of features, for instance, in case you don't want the week of plague to occur in your map. The same goes for spells, heroes, and artifacts, and it's easy. It is also easy to find the various conditions you want to set for the map, win-loss conditions, and so on. Structures and items are simple to place on the map. It was a bit hard finding out how to drag and turn them, but after some time experimenting with the controls, it gets easier. All in all, a decent map maker will no doubt be able to create simple maps by setting up terrain features and objects. Even setting up a campaign seems doable. There is a separate campaign tool that enables you to carry over heroes, and as we have seen in the campaigns, the heroes do indeed carry over from one map to the next with the builds you create. The thing I'm not so sure about is the scripting. Setting the win condition, singular, is easy enough, but quests are more complicated. Doable, but complicated. The good news is that even I managed to grasp the general idea of it after half an hour of poking around. Still, there could, and should, be more tips and explanations in the help file. How to set multiple quests in sequence, for instance. Not all those codes are self-explanatory, far from it. You have to sort out, guess at it, and try it out to see if it worked. You can test the map within the editor, but it's really resource-draining. Conclusion: I can work with this. That probably means more talented people can do wonders. The big problem is the size of the maps the editor generates. As outlined here, the size of these map files generated by the editor is above 20 megabytes as a finished product and 80 megabytes as an editable file. This is completely unprecedented. Files from the previous games could be sent via email. These can't. Still, I'm confident that you, our community, can come up with some creative solutions to this challenge. Let's be solution-oriented. Perhaps we can use torrents for distribution of maps. Maybe you could open a free Dropbox account and share the link with your friends if you want them to have a look at it. Since people with low-end PCs and web connections can't use this game anyway, it should be doable. Just a bit awkward. We here at Celestial Heavens are already looking into ways we can assist the community of map makers out there, if not by hosting the map files as usual, then setting up a distribution network of a different sort. By request, the developers also included an RMG, Random Map Generator. In case you're having trouble finding it, you go into the editor and click New Map to get these options. You see this image here. I like that you can also make combat maps. Choosing the random type, you can set the size, the type, skirmish or scenario, the number of players, and a few other things. It takes a while to generate it, though. Selecting a small skirmish map, I waited for 6 minutes. The result was an okay map that can be played but has little charm. For that, we need human beings. Modding! Come on, geniuses, show yourselves! I was going to say something clever about being able to make mods, but then I realized I don't know anything about it. Except to say that we know that there are already some out there. With that possibility, all we need now is some eager beavers breaking new ground and coming up with new ways to change the game. We're looking forward to it. Conclusion. The campaigns are enjoyable, as are the single-player maps. Most of the bugs have been rooted out, but there are still some that really should have been polished out by now. The multiplayer feature is not good, mostly because the infrastructure offered by Ubisoft is not working properly. The editor looks really exciting, and I'm eager to see what more skilled mapmakers than I can do with it. At a lowered price, as the game sells now, this game is worth buying for its single-player entertainment and its potential for map production. The amount of bugs and the lacking multiplayer structure make paying full price unjustifiable, meaning the end score of this game is 4 stars out of 6. The good: we have good campaigns, a functional editor, good music and graphics. The bad: bugs, high PC and internet requirements, and malfunctioning Uplay multiplayer. That's it. That's the Hero 7 review from Celestial Heavens. Thank you for listening. Have a good day.